Hey, it's Bootstrapped Web. We're back. Jordan, what's up, buddy?
What's up, baby? How you doing?
Doing good.
All I have in my mind is, you're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. Over and over and over and over.
Over and over, yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. My the girls in my house are playing the Christmas music, and it's driving me a little bit insane, but I'm dealing with it.
Are you down with the kids bop? Has kids bop taken over your life yet?
I don't know what that is. I don't know if I want to know what that is, but
you kind of do. Kids bop is brilliant. It's kids singing like popular pop songs. And of course they have like Kids Bop Christmas and a Kids Bop YouTube thing. And it's like taking over my whole life.
It's just a matter of time.
Yep. And I kind of listen to it on my own. Whatever.
Put it on Spotify. There you go.
What's up, everybody? It's almost holiday time. Cardhook is going to set it on fire tonight at their holiday party. Whoop! We're on Top Golf with 16 people.
That sounds like cheap. So I grabbed my ticket for MicroConf Growth. I'll be there again. I don't know. What is it, like the seventh or eighth year in a row now?
Right. That's awesome.
Or not year, but MicroConf. I know I went to one in Europe. I can't keep track anymore.
I can't. I think it's like five or I don't know. But that's right. Tickets came out. Tickets were bought. I haven't done the whole flights and hotel thing, but once you get the tickets, you're good to go.
I mean, I usually fly in on the Sunday and leave on Wednesday. I don't know. A couple of people were talking about maybe going in earlier and doing something before MicroConf. So I don't know. That's up in the air. We'll see.
Yeah, cool. It sounds nice to have a little time before you kind of get sucked into the hotel thing for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And then before that, I've got two big Snow Tiny comps that I'm kind of counting the days. It's still over a month away, but I can't wait to get out there. End of January and then February, I'm going to Vermont and then Colorado. So that's always fun.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah. MicroConf's this, it's like a marker in the year. I know for me, I assume other people also, you want to have good news and you want to be able to be proud of what you've accomplished. And like, there's like this social pressure around that. And I always look at Bart's like, oh, I want to be able to have done X, Y, and Z so I could talk about it. Whatever ego that is, but that's just truth.
Yep. And it's like, it's at a good point in the year. You're always around like March or April. So it's like you've started whatever big thing you want to get going in the new year. It's like a quick breather at the beginning of the year to go out at that point. It's good.
I think there will be an interesting dynamic with Tiny Seed. They will have injected or at least brought out into the open the desire for traditionally bootstrap founders who are openly saying, I want funding. So that's a different thing. And it's coming from the top also at the conference. So I think that'll be an interesting dynamic kind of mixed in. I'm happy about it.
I'm sure that's like already going to be the theme. Like, you know how every year there's like some topic, some theme that like everyone's kind of talking about. There's a little bit of that, and there's a little bit of like the how fast do you need to go? What, like the stuff that Justin Jackson has been talking about lately about bootstrapping and well, it's kind of related. Like, do you fund strap? Do you bootstrap? Do you go slow? Like, what do you do? I feel like that's the and it's good. Like, I've been kind of wanting this discussion for years, more of this discussion to happen for years. I feel like we're this community is getting a little bit more real about things. It's good.
Yeah, and the timing will be interesting because it could be that the first cohort is actually chosen by then.
Yeah. Yeah. I know Rob was talking about like starting the applications in January, February and getting that.
Right. So if that happens, we might be rolling into MicroConf and like, you know, call it 8 to 10 founders are going to have a little halo over their head. Like, now they're a Tiny Seed company. That's just going to be a very cool dynamic. Cause once that happens, that's what kicks in the fact that it's acceptable. And then other people are like envious and then they want it, which makes it wanted by other people. It will be interesting to see the dynamic that happens there. And then moving forward from that after the first year too. Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of curious to see like what is different about companies who go that route in terms of their strategy and the things that they do. Like, what can we see like from the outside looking at these startups? Like, we'll probably discuss this later in 2019 after there've been, you know, a bunch have gone through this sort of program. Like, Like, what have they done differently? What would they have done with it or without it? And I think that'll be interesting.
Right, because it's not enough money to really change the spend. Like, oh, now I'm going to spend 10 grand a month on advertising. Like, that's not really it. It's the ability to focus.
It's the time. You're getting time. You're getting the ability to not have to have a job.
Right. So in that way, it's not so much what the money can do. It's like, what can this founder do with a little space? It's, you know, an exaggerated form of betting on the jockey, because it's not actually giving resources that the money's doing its thing. That's just hiring salespeople and pushing a marketing and making the design better and all this other stuff. It's really, what can this person do when they just have a little more space? That's fascinating. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure that also gets to, like, only the best ideas or the best execution plans actually get in. Like, these programs wouldn't take, like you're saying, like, it's not like about this fast growth. Like, if you just give it money, it'll grow. It's like, it is about getting good ideas off the ground, and like, they have to be solid coming in. I guess that's obvious, but it'll be interesting to see. Excited.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
So what do we got on the list today? I basically just have two things. I just kind of, I actually built a second product, the second one in the past 30 days. This one is a little software app that I worked on for the past 2 weeks, and it's called Sunrise KPI. I'll talk about that.
Should we be worried about you? You're doing too much product.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm having fun with it, though. I like it.
I think you're taking advantage of it. And look, you leveled up the actual coding ability, but the ship ability is a different thing. And now you're shipping.
We could talk about that. The other thing that I'll talk about today is I talked a bit about having, you know, going into a partnership thing on Process Kit. It turns out that's not happening. So I'll kind of give a little bit of my thinking on what's next there. Those are kind of the two big things on my end. What about you? What do you got today?
So I had an interesting experience with a large customer came on board. It's like our most glamorous customer so far. Like, everyone knows them. My wife uses the product. Like, you know, it's a recognizable name that kind of most people know in the direct-to-consumer world, which is like exactly what we want. And the experience was just really interesting. So I want to talk about a few things that we learned around that. And we are handing out equity stock options to our employees for the first time. Like, we've talked about it. We said we wanted to do it. And like, myself and some of the executives have that, like, you know, that was part of the compensation package for Ryan to come on board, all this stuff. And it's just been an interesting experience to go through, like, the moral stuff and how much do you give and how much is enough and what would you want. So I want to talk about that a little bit. You kind of have to tiptoe around that to an extent, but I think that's kind of worth exploring, almost the discomfort it caused. And besides that, I had a great experience last week. My father and both of my brothers came out to Portland to see the new office. That was the excuse to come out here. And it was like a great, you know, marker, something to be proud of. It was exciting. It was like emotional. You know, we used to work together, the four of us. So they kind of saw, like, this lunatic left us and left New York and went to Portland. Let's see, like, what he's really doing with it.
From a coffee shop in Connecticut to working and growing into a big office with a team. And it's got to be pretty cool to see, have your family come in.
Yes, it gave, like, you know, it was one of those like perspective moments of like, hey, I know there's a bunch of stuff to do and a lot of stuff to worry about, but you do have to be grateful and like be okay accepting like that you're doing a great job. Sometimes you're like, yeah, but we have a long way to go. Every once in a while you have to be like, yes, thank you. I'm going to actually enjoy it for a little while. So it was a great visit.
Yeah, very cool.
All right. Want to kick things off with one of your topics?
Yeah. So I think I talked about this last episode. I finished the first new product that was automation guides. That sold pretty well over Black Friday. And then I was I wondered, like, will that actually sell after Black Friday? And it's had a couple of sales since. So that's been good to see. I have some automation in place for that. But I was like, you know what? I have a couple more weeks and this little idea came around. I kind of want my key metrics sent to me in an email every day. The thought was, you know, I need to be more data-driven, not even so much data-driven, just to see every day, what are my numbers? Like, what are the numbers? So, and how do they change from yesterday? So that the things that I am doing, whether it's content or different things that I'm doing, like I need to know like what actually had an impact, you know? And I don't have time to go open up like five different dashboards from five different tools. I just want my traffic numbers, my revenue numbers, my subscriber count, and percent increase or decrease from yesterday, and a couple other metrics that I want to pull in. So I had that idea, and I was like, you know what? This is a project that I could probably build in Ruby on Rails. So I started that 2 weeks ago. And as we record today, I basically have finished building all of the functionality, like the base version one functionality that I'm going to want to have for this thing to work. It currently integrates with Drip, Google Analytics. That was a beast, by the way. Stripe and Twitter. So you can put in your Twitter followers. You put in your email. It sends an email from the app. Like, these are all things that I did not know how to do a few weeks ago. You can set up an automated schedule. So send me an email every day or every week or every month or every quarter. It runs that on a recurring schedule. All that is functional. I can't believe it. It works. Like, I there's no way I could have built anything like that a year ago. The only things I have left to do on it are, you know, make it look good. It's just like data in the browser and in an email. So I'm going to, you know, design the UI a little bit. And then I'm just going to create a simple one-page marketing site for it. I haven't done that yet, but I do have the domain. I'm going to announce it here to give myself a little pressure to get this thing built between today and when this episode comes out on Thursday. So,
oh, cool.
So the domain is sunrisekpi.com. You know, key performance indicators. So sunrisekpi.com. And there's nothing there as of today, but I'm going to design some landing page between now and Thursday.
Good pressure. Are you charging?
So I think it's going to be free to start. I'm thinking at some point the plan will be to have like a pro plan. I'm going to start with free just to get some users in there and get feedback and probably find like 1,000 bugs.
That's cool.
And I'm going to start using it myself. And this is very much going to be a side hustle. You know, I am going to dive into Process Kit soon.
I think once it's out there, you're going to hear so much feedback. I have things that I want to add to it right now.
Yeah. Right? There are a couple more things that I'll want to add to it as well. But I've had some pretty good feedback on it, like on Twitter and stuff. I think on the front end, it'll be an audience builder, hopefully. And just a tool that I want to use. I don't know. Maybe I will start charging for it and having like, I think it'll probably be like a cheap plan, like maybe free and like $15 a month or something to, you know, for pro features.
Yeah. I think you'll find out more as people give you feedback and depending on what they want, how valuable it is, how difficult it is and so on. And then you'll see. I think it's great.
And just in the last 2 weeks of hacking on this thing, it's hard to like measure this, but my coding confidence has gone, it's taken a huge step forward just in literally the last like 10 to 14 days. Working on this every single day, hacking through some pretty sticky problems and like getting pretty frustrated a few days and then breaking through and getting it to work. And I'm getting better at Googling for problems. I've learned new parts of Rails that I haven't worked with before. I don't know, the confidence level is up. For sure. You know,
that's great. That coincides nicely with it, right? If you're not going to kick things off on Process Kit with a tech partner, as your development confidence is growing, then, you know, you don't have to wait for finding someone else or, right? Is that your intention to just start booging?
Yeah. I could talk all about that, but why don't we switch over to you first?
True. Sure. So I had an interesting learning experience, and it's really the company's learning experience, not mine so much. So this really big customer came in. The great thing about it, one of the things that made me most happy, is I had very little to do with it. So they came in, they asked for a demo. Our success team did the demo, built up the relationship with the agency they're working with. Everything kind of happened. I got pulled in when it was like, hey, their CEO wants to talk. Do you want to join on that call? And I said, yes. And then we talked. And then at the very end on the pricing negotiation, their CEO was actually pretty hardcore. The pricing, it was more, not confrontational, but tense of a conversation than we're used to. And it's good we have more of a defined enterprise tier now instead of like, well, let's just see what happens. Now we're like, it starts at $2,000 and here's how it works and all this other stuff. But he pushed back. But those were the only two things that I had anything to do with.
Was he pushing on price or what he wanted included?
He was really interested in winning more than anything else. Because I know the budget is not an issue because they were recently acquired by a gigantic consumer packaged goods company. So it wasn't a matter of budget. It was, I'm used to getting what I want. All right. So it was an interesting conversation in that I wanted to make sure that we got what we need, but at the same time, he was going to walk away feeling like he won, which is fine. Hey. So those were the only two interactions that I had anything to do with, also known as I did not add much value into the process at all. So to see our team's ability to close our biggest client ever was great. That was like, okay. So that's a learning experience right there. The next learning experience was when they launched. First, it was exciting. Great. You know, my wife and I immediately sat up. We're like, let's buy a product. Let's you know, add an upsell. Let's really experience this. Cool. But the second I got to their checkout, I got disappointed. And I was like, oh man, they're not using our checkout. And then I scrolled down and realized it was on one page and it actually was our checkout. The reason I didn't recognize it is because it looked so much better than what our checkout normally looks like.
Wow.
I was like, oh, they made it look a lot better than we do.
So like they went in and did some like custom design work to your product, basically.
Exactly right. They CSS and HTML access that we give, and they used it, and the spacing was right, and the font and the colors. It was like, it was on point.
Yeah. They had their like in-house designers do their thing.
So immediately when I saw that, I just started taking screenshots. I started slacking everyone on the team. Like, here's our learning opportunity. Let's see how they did it. Let's make ours look better. Let's talk to the developer that did the customizations so that we understand how their experience was custom coding our app, right? Because that we want more customers like them, it usually is going to mean custom modifications. And we need to know if that developer is like, this was the biggest pain in the ass I've ever dealt with, or this was a delight. And we don't really get those chances.
We did that a lot in Restaurant Engine because we built in that ability to have like custom CSS on your WordPress restaurant website that we serve up for you. And early on, I was like, yeah, if a restaurant happens to know CSS, then they could use that. But it turned into like a productized service built on software. So I did it a bit, but then I hired people who had CSS chops. And like part of the setup process was we go in and we don't build a custom theme. We just use our themes. And we put a bunch of custom CSS on them for each restaurant, you know.
And when you do that, you discover like the bones of the app. You really get to experience how easy is it to customize? Does it work the way you expect it? And so on. So then we went to the upsell page. And the upsell page looked a lot better than our default upsell page. So that was more learning. And we went to the thank you page and it did not look good because you could tell that they weren't able to achieve what they were trying. So that was like, okay, so clearly let's figure that next piece out. Then when I took a step back, what I realized was the reason this was such a like a surprise in terms of, oh, look how good they made it look and let's like find this stuff out and let's do this work and let's contact them and build what they want on the thank you page and let's take this opportunity to kind of nail things on the satisfaction of this customer and learn from it. Really what it told me was that we have been so focused internally on the next sprint and the next feature and communicating with customers and just thinking about ourselves. And we really stopped focusing on how people experience the end product of our app, right? We're just so in the conversation with our customers.
Yeah. Those conversations tend to be like pre-sales, onboarding, just signed up. But you're not hearing much from them like after they're on board for a while.
Exactly right. And so you can become convinced that it's not the most important thing. But in reality, when a total stranger, not us, not our customer, when the shopper goes to the checkout page and starts to buy, that is actually the most important thing. Because if we nail that, then the merchant is more successful, and then they stay as a customer, and we're more successful, and so on. And it almost like got away from us. We're like, didn't think about that interaction that much. And even as I checked out on the beautiful looking checkout page, I noticed that we were doing that unbelievably annoying thing when you start to type a zip code and you put in one number and it's like not a valid zip code until you type in all five numbers. Yeah. I was like, guys, I hate that, but I haven't checked out on this in the past month. So it kind of like smacked me in the head like, yo, don't forget what's really important is what's actually being interacted with, not just how people are building inside of our app, but the end result, the page that gets published.
Yeah. And then it's like, how can you even leverage that in marketing? Like, can you do case studies or like testimonials from customers of your customers? Like, oh my God, this is like the easiest checkout from this t-shirt company or whatever it is. Like, you know,
Stripe just launched their new version of their checkout. It has that very frictionless experience of you type in the credit card and then the credit card number disappears and you automatically go to the month and year. And you push that and then that disappears and you move forward. And it's like you don't have to stop and tab and move around. But that's our product. We want to be innovative on how that works. What it really told me is like we can't do that. We can't go months without being focused on it. So how do we do that? Is it one person's job? Is it one of the front end engineers? Is that like their thing? Is it QA? So it was a weird thing. So it was a big customer came in and then made us super happy. And then it made us like introspective on like, we have to do better on focusing on that.
A couple of months ago, I switched my web hosting provider for all of my sites over to, this is going to sound like an ad and they should be paying us for this, but I'm just saying, not getting paid. Flywheel hosting. If you're doing WordPress sites, they're a WordPress hosting company. I moved all my sites to them. Like what you're describing, the experience for a customer like me is perfectly thought out on every aspect of the experience, whether it's like connecting your domain, slapping an SSL certificate on it, having multiple websites under a single account, like all these little things like, you know, turning caching off, turning caching on, you know, template sites when you're firing up a new one. And then today I was actually playing with if you're a WordPress developer, they have a free local WordPress dev environment so that you can fire up a local install while you're developing. I just used this for the first time today, a few hours ago. It completely takes away all the complicated, you know, bullshit with like a MAMP server and running all this other crap, like just to get going. Like it's a beautiful interface, gets me up and running. It's just great. Fast hosting, great support. Like, all right, that's advertisement over, but like
right, but they nailed it, and you can feel the difference when someone nails it, because that only happens.
You guys listen to this podcast, I don't just talk about products, like, and I just chose to talk about this on the air for, you know, like that's how good it is, right? Like that's where customer experience really comes through,
right? It's rare, but it requires so much focus. You know, I've read a bunch of stuff around like how investors choose who to invest in. And it's like the teams that are solving their own problem are the ones that can nail the experience that way. Now I remember I was reading Ryan Caldwell, who I follow on Twitter, who runs Circle Up, and they invest in direct to consumer brands. And he was writing their like thesis and how they choose. And they only look at founders and teams that are solving their own problem because of that. So I saw recently a direct consumer brand that does dress shirts for athletic men. Like guys who are jacked basically have a hard time finding shirts that make sense for them. It's two jack guys who started it. It's like, okay, that they're going to nail the experience more so than others. Yeah. Hopefully I can talk about who the customer is over the next few weeks.
Yeah. I want to hear who it is once we stop recording. Yeah. Let's talk about Process Kit for a bit. As I mentioned in the last couple of episodes, about a month ago, 4 or 5 weeks ago, for a while I was talking about like finding a technical co-founder and kind of going back and forth on, should I do it solo? Should I find a co-founder? So one guy that I know, we kind of hooked up about a month ago and it looked good. And we kind of decided like, yeah, we're going to start doing this. But he had a pretty big project to wrap up between then and just this past week. It was looking good. We were both kind of looking ahead to doing the partnership starting in December. That project that he was on just kind of wrapped up. I'll just say it's a pretty different outcome than he was expecting. And that kind of changed things for him going forward. Long story short, he basically decided like he can't, like we were about to kind of like sign papers and get into the partnership and start working together. But right at that goal line, he was like, you know what, gotta pull out. And, you know, just to be honest, like I completely understand where he was coming from. Like I know the whole backstory and like, if I were in his shoes, I probably would have done the same thing. And we had a good chat about it. Okay, I've literally been putting Process Kit on hold. Like I haven't done any work on it in the past month because I was waiting for this partnership to start. You know, you could think about it like, oh, that's a big setback, like all that lost time. What could I have done during that time? It's strange because like as soon as I heard that he's out, I had this sense of like, it's totally okay. And I'm actually kind of excited too at like what's next. I was disappointed because I felt like this was going to be a good partnership. I felt like we were going to really work well together and do good things for Process Kit. But I wasn't at all disappointed about this being a setback or a waste of time, partly because I was able to build two new products in the last month. So that's
good.
It kept me busy and I made that time pretty productive. I'm happy with that.
And the confidence.
Yeah, so the confidence.
That's what does it.
So, you know, I actually just wrote a short article about this. I'm going to send it to my list tomorrow. It'll be sent by the time this comes out. This idea of having a plan B, that I feel like this has come up for me in definitely in this situation, but in a couple of other pretty big situations lately, where it's like there's this big thing that's about to happen, whether it's forming a new partnership or some other big new development. And I don't know whether or not it's going to actually happen. Are we going to get to the finish line? And is this going to be a win or a failure? We don't know. Having a plan B in your back pocket has like completely removed any risk from taking a big move like this, right? Like in my mind, like I had already even started coding Process Kit in Rails before that partnership came about. So I have that as a fallback. I had already made progress on it. I even, the last 2 weeks, I got even better at coding in Rails because I did another app in it. So it's like, I feel like that much more confident. So it's like having this plan B, even gaming out that plan B so much that it's like, I'm almost excited about it. Like it's like, I almost want that to be the plan A. It was like, as soon as I got off the call yesterday with him, I was like, all right, well, I know exactly what I'm going to do. Like there's like the wheels are already in motion, you know? So,
I think that's, you know, these things tend to work out the way they're supposed to for better or worse. And, what it reminds me of is, remember that, I don't even know if it's a Churchill quote, it's attributed to Churchill, but it's nowhere in his like canon, which everything is in his canon that he's ever said. But that quote attributed to him of success being going from one failure to another without loss of enthusiasm. When I think we get used to that as founders, we're like, oh, that didn't work out. Keep going. It's almost like okay, so that's what happened. Now, where do we go?
That's exactly what I was actually writing about in this thing that I'm sending out tomorrow. Like, because if you don't have a fallback and this big new thing fails, like that's the point where you can get like, ah, oh, that sucks. It's a downer. Like you lose inspiration, everything. But if you have that parallel path, like just ready to go, like it's like you haven't lost a beat, you know?
Is it fallback though, or is it really just like the destination is set?
It's the same destination, different route, you know? It might take a little bit longer, but.
Yes. You're like, okay. You know, I think of my good buddy, Bob Marley, you know, when one door closes, another opens, it's universal. It just keeps happening. It keeps happening. Yeah. So I think you're right. And I think it's a mature, experienced way to handle it, where you could see, you know, if being much younger or maybe of different character, you get it and it can depress you and then you get down and, oh, I thought it was going to work out this way and it didn't. And what am I going to do now? As opposed to, all right, cool.
Yeah. And then you start taking like less risks and you kind of give up on the idea or whatever it is. But like, I know exactly what I need to do. I've already started a couple months ago. I started coding the thing. So I'm just going to pick up where I left off basically. get back into probably in another week or two after I finish this Sunrise KPI thing. I'm just going to dive right back into Process Kit. The plan before is the plan now, which was I'm going to do this solo. I'm going to build a simple first version myself in Rails, see where I go with that. And I'm still certainly open to the idea of working with a technical partner on this at some point. I don't know if or when that might happen, but like right now I am now looking to like make progress myself, and then down the road if somebody needs to come in, that would be good. It's just hard to say, hard to predict, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like you've worked for the past year to be able to do this, and now it kind of pays off, and whatever happens in terms of partnership in the future and other people, who knows, but the fact that you don't have to stop and wait is the key.
Yeah. And you know, I've been solo for so many years, and that's really my comfort zone. I had gotten over the fact of like, okay, I should actually work with a partner instead of be solo on this. Like that took me a little while to wrap my head around. It was like, am I ready to go into a partnership? But now I do feel a little bit good about going back to the solo plan, because it's like, that's how I operate. I can go
your
as
natural
fast
state.
It's my natural state. I could push as hard as I want to, as fast as I want to, or I could slow down and do other things. Like it's totally open now. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Cool. All right. Well, look, I kind of changed my mind on talking about the equity thing. It is fraught with peril, man. I think the only thing I want to say about it is there's like nowhere to go for advice. Anyone you ask is in a different situation. Everyone does it differently. You know, San Francisco startups that like are their only goal is to get really, really big and get acquired. They do things a certain way. All the articles are written from weird points of view.
I'm a little bit unclear on what the question is. So like, is it like, and you know, we don't have to go into everything here, but
We don't have to get into specifics just to talk about the issue.
So like some key employees, like they were promised equity at some point, but the specifics haven't been laid out for them, and you're trying to figure that out. Is that right?
So a lot of this stuff, and very often my true north on things like this is just, how would I want to be treated? We had our first maternity situation in the company recently. So a female employee who's pregnant. And my true north is like, well, how would I want my wife to be treated by a company if she were in that situation? And then we kind of proceed from that as our moral center of like, okay, how would we want to be treated? What's the most we can do given our situation as a company and financially, you know, and so on. So this is the same kind of thing. If I'm a 26-year-old working at a software company, you know, that's a few years old and is growing, how would I want to be treated? And part of that for me would be skin in the game, some upside in the action. Salary is awesome, but at least give me the chance, the possibility of a life altering, maybe not life changing, but an impactful outcome. The nature of our company has shifted. It's not like let's build a revenue stream. It's now like let's get big and probably let's shoot to get acquired, right? It's like if it's IPO or acquired, the chances of IPO, they're pretty small. I have no problem with building a software company that's just successful and makes good money for a long period of time. And in that situation, I would do something like dividends or revenue sharing. It was always in my head to get our employees involved in the upside. And then when it actually comes time to look at a spreadsheet and all of a sudden decide how much does each person get, it is a very strange position of power to be in. You're like, so I just decide, it's just up to me what's fair and what's not fair. And there's something about Portland and most markets that the workforce isn't hyper-educated on how this stuff works. In San Francisco, like your roommate from when you were younger worked at X, Y, and Z, and that got acquired, and now they're living the good life. So everyone's kind of aware of it, and it's part of the conversation when you're even talking about employment and salary to begin with. Stock options are part of that conversation everywhere you look. In Portland and other markets, it's just not like that. So we went through that experience.
And I feel like a lot of people these days, especially younger, you know, people in their 20s, like they're just known for job hopping, you know, and that's a way to keep them, you know, committed to for a longer haul here.
I try not to think of it that way as a mechanism for holding them in place. I look at it as I just, if I were them,
it makes your work more meaningful. Like, yeah,
exactly right. If I'm working and I have a salary and I look over at Jordan over there in the other corner of the office, and if this company gets acquired for $100 million, that guy over there makes a shit ton of money and I just don't, that would feel weird to me.
Yeah. And then there's the question of transparency. I don't think you guys do like transparent like salaries for everyone. And
nope, not that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a weird experience. It was kind of like soul searching thing of what's reasonable and what's not. You have some metrics. You think about how much equity you have and your co-founders.
Yeah.
And
like, what are the factors? Like, is it like time being with the company, like role on the team, you know?
Right. You kind of have to put a value to people's contributions, which is also messy. And there's recency bias. If someone's been doing really well or someone's not been doing as well as they usually do, or so it was a strange situation. I talked to the lawyer about what they see. I talked to people inside the company, the other executives, to kind of check my thinking, made adjustments and said what was fair and so on, and just tried to think about the future. Because it's not, okay, let's give equity and there's no more ever given. Like, if you set that precedent, you know, we have 18 employees now. What does it look like if we have 100 employees? You have to think about that. How much can you? The whole thing was a very it was a difficult exercise, but I'm glad it, and now I have I'm doing it today. I'm telling them today.
Oh yeah. So right. You figured it out. You have the numbers worked out.
I have the numbers worked out, and now I'm almost like a little nervous for their reaction. Right. I hope they're happy and that my.
How are you doing it? Like, are you doing like one-on-ones with everyone?
Yep, one-on-ones. So our holiday party is today. And so it's just a celebratory mood. We gave holiday bonuses and that paycheck hit today. So I get to tell them about that, which is cool. And then I kind of want to layer on the other good news and then like pop some champagne and go play Top Golf. I want to make it like a good experience.
Nice.
Yep. So hopefully that all kind of works out, you know, the way I think it will.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, that's exciting, man. What else we got? Is that all we got? Wrap it up?
I don't know. I think we can wrap it up. It's 12:15. Our newest employee starting today, and I just heard the commotion outside of this conference room. So clearly she just got here. She's got impeccable time. She gets here on the day we're giving equity to everybody and the holiday party. She nailed it.
Stepped in at the right time there. Yep. Awesome. Awesome. Yep.
Cool, man. Well, it's good to catch up. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Yep. Yeah, this will come out next week. And maybe at some point we'll get like a end of the year or a new year episode in there. Thinking about, you know, annual goals. That those posts are coming up in the next few weeks. We'll see.
Yes, a little look back and a look forward. One of those.
Yep. Uh-oh. Awesome.
Uh-oh.
Well, yeah. Talk soon.
Good stuff, man. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, everybody.